We're good. We're live.
Live.
Live again. We've made, what's this, three episodes now?
Episode three.
Wow. Yep. I didn't think this relationship would last this long. It's quite amazing. pretty good podcast start today, I think.
Yeah, very good. We got down to some good analysis of the game, I think, to help people out.
And some good listeners' questions as well. If you don't already as well, guys, make sure you are following us. But without further ado, let's hit up episode number three of the Coach's Corner. Tom, last week we talked about why you aren't getting better at golf, you in particular, because you're not getting better, you're getting worse, in fact. But we talked about analysing your game, and we wanted to touch back on that this week and sort of go into it in a little bit more detail and say, well, how do you become brutally honest with yourself? Because we had a few questions after the episode saying, yeah, it's great, but how do I actually sit down and analyse my own game if I'm to say, well, I need to improve X, Y, and Z? How do I go about it?
Yeah, we mentioned, didn't we, being able to either go into your lesson or sit down at the end of the round and figure out what you're going to practice to be better next week or in your next competition. And like you say, it's a case of your interpretations can be wrong a lot of the time. You can come off and feel like you drove the ball terribly. In a matter of fact, it didn't really cost you any shots.
Yeah.
One of the biggest ones people say about that is, well, I didn't hit many fairways. But if your ball was only 6 foot off the fairway, you've probably not lost a shot, really.
Yeah.
But it feels bad. It feels like a bad performance.
As long as it's not a lost golf ball or...
Yeah. So you could come off and go, I drove it terribly. And you could feel like you'd put it okay or mediocre, but you didn't. You missed a 3 foot or you missed a 6 foot or whatever it might be, and you could have gained some shots there. So it is about how you would analyse that. And there are a few different ways to do it. Don't know if you've done anything when you were younger on a scorecard, but I think the most basic thing I ever done...
We were using abacuses back then when I was young.
the most basic thing I ever done was just a couple of columns on a scorecard separate to where I was keeping score.
Yeah.
And it would just have D or fairways, maybe F. G for greens and P for putts.
I had it because normally you would get four columns, wouldn't you? Like player A, B, C, and D, and then you have your markers score. So I'd always put my score in my markers score box, and then I had F, G, and P, fairways, greens, and putts. And then I also had a U for up and downs.
Right.
That's how I went a little bit. I went deep.
So that's going a bit deeper into it,
I went real deep. But yeah, that is probably the most basic. And even if we were to get probably 50 golfers in a room at club level, and asked them how many of them do that, what do you reckon?
There wouldn't be many. It seems to be somebody either does all or nothing, don't they?
Yeah,
you get people who go out and just, well, it only matters what score I shoot.
Yeah.
Or you're the guy who goes and takes every little bit of data you can, and you're probably the person who likes to look at your figures on Top Tracers and Flight Scopes as well. Everyone seems to be fully one side or fully the other.
Yeah. Where from there then? So, well, obviously, first point, that would be a recommendation, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
doing that small, just that even small thing. But times have moved on from us writing FGP and U on a scorecard. Where would you go with it nowadays? Because there's so much out there, and it's so easy as well. That's like the big thing. Instead of like guessing at what you should be working at, you can just find out within a matter of minutes, really, after your round.
Yeah, so you've got a few bits of technology now, really, haven't you? Where the one I'm most familiar with, which I had for a couple of seasons, was Game Golf.
Yeah.
So it's got...
Is that the red box?
Yeah, red box. You've got a little clip that you either clip to your bag or I think it's made to clip on your belt.
Yeah.
And then every golf club has got a little tag that you stick in the hole of the grip at the top.
Yeah.
So what you do before every shot you play, give it a tap.
Yeah.
That'll register where you are on the course. There is an app for your phone as well, so you can use it as a GPS.
All right.
Comes to the end of your round, you press finish round. You've got to have a little bit of a fiddle when it comes to the green, because you've got to tell it how far you were from the flag, because it obviously doesn't know where the flag is. It just knows where your ball is.
Yeah.
So that makes a difference. And then once you press finish round, it'll give you percentage of fairways, percentage of greens. It gives you strokes gained, which we'll mention what that is in a little bit.
Mm.
And then it kind of gives you straight away and in a good picture as well, because it's got some graphs.
Yeah.
And you can straight away see where your level's best, where it's worse. It might be red or green. It's as simple as that, very visual for you.
Yeah.
And it tells you where you can go to get better.
Mm. And that's where that brutal honesty then becomes a bit easier, doesn't it? Because if you've got the data there in front of you and you could say, do you know what, I'm a great putter. You know, I'm really good at putting, but then it flashes up that actually you had 10 six-footers and you only held one of them throughout the round, but you know, you sort of always think, ah, you know, that it was an off day, that, but then it becomes a recurring thing. But you're focusing on trying to hit more greens.
Yeah.
But if you hold a few more six-footers, it's not you just saying, oh, you know, yeah, exactly, score drops, but you've got it there with that data set just to actually almost take the onus of being harsh on yourself away, isn't it? It says it there in black and white or whatever colour it is that's going to be on the screen, but it's just got the data there for you.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It takes all the onus off you then. Yeah. It's facts. Even when you go back to just what we were saying before of marking it on a scorecard, if you do that over 5 rounds, it's very simple just to come up with a percentage for yourself.
Yeah,
you can just quickly at the end of every round give yourself a percentage and go, I hit 40% of fairways, 50% of greens, whatever it might be. You can probably then notice a big difference in whether you, when you miss the fairway, does that then result in a missed green? So you can start painting a little bit of a picture, depending on how much time you want to set. But I think the big one as well, which is past the strokes gained, is when you are marking your fairway. Back in the day, I marked fairways hit.
Yeah.
But I think the best way for people to do that now would be to do more a shot loss. So if you miss the, like I said before, if you miss the fairway by 3 feet, don't really mark it as a missed fairway because you've not lost a shot.
I class, when I'm playing, like, say, around Warrington, the semi-rough's only, at best, 3 yards wide.
A lot of people would probably prefer the line teed up a little bit,
and you think, well, that's, like, no problem whatsoever. I've hit it, you know, close to 300 yards and trying to control it down a 20, 30-yard fairway. If it's 1 yard off, it's not really that bad, is it?
No, so when you are marking it, don't be too harsh on yourself there, and probably mark your tee shots down as, did it cost me a shot, rather than did it go on the fairway?
Yeah, were you chipping out of the trees? Were you reloading again because it was on the A49? Or in a back garden or wherever it may be? Was it in, you know, super like thick rough off the side of the fairway that
you've hacking out, you know, and you can't reach the green?
You've got to go and look for it firstly. You can't say, oh, I can see it right there, and it's an easy shot towards the green. It's, you know, don't be, like you say, don't be too penal, because I think with everything nowadays, obviously, everyone's like harping on about distance, aren't they? Naturally, it's quite funny, after we go and finish this podcast, I've got a little test that we're going to film today for my YouTube channel about fairways hit. I think it would be a lot better for players, especially of club level, to hit more fairways, wouldn't it?
100%. Well, I seen something the other week, and I can't remember who wrote the article now, but there was
Dave, every time.
there's basically a study been done over the last few years that if you can hit the golf ball 220 yards off the tee and you play it, your normal golf course, your average golf course, 220 yards, then you don't lose any shots to par off the fairway. So if you can just be really accurate from 220, and obviously the rest of your game can match up, you play off scratch.
Yeah.
So if you're going to stand there and say, I don't hit the ball far enough because I've just watched Bryson this weekend, or I left myself too far into a green.
Yeah.
If your ball's going 220, don't worry about it.
Yeah, and that's again where like the honesty side of it all comes back to it, because you can get sucked into what you see and what you hear, you know, from like watching golf and stuff like that. These guys and girls are playing totally different venues to us, aren't they? You know, you look at Bay Hill as we're recording this last night. Average par four's like 430, I think.
440.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, at Warrington, that's one of the longest par fours on the course.
Yeah.
So when I go out, that's I think two, three holes, 440 par fours.
Yeah.
But then we've got par fives that are 480.
And I don't want to discredit the pros too much. Obviously, they're amazing at what they do, but how wide are the fairways as well?
Oh, they look massive.
They're a lot bigger than what we get round.
Huge.
Like you say, Warrington or Helsby. So.
So like that's where, you know, again, falling back into it, you could be looking at, you know, watching golf on TV and say, God, do you hit it miles? I don't hit it very far. But actually, well, how many times are you in the middle of the fairway or on or around it giving yourself a shot to go at the green?
Yeah, if it's enough time, if you can analyse that and you can make sure you've got the figures for that, you'll probably realise it's it's not costing you as many shots as you think it is, and it's probably not costing you any at all unless you are wild and out of bounds and in the trees and
big chopper just spraying it everywhere. But
we've all been there.
Yeah, we have all been there. It's probably going to happen when we go back to golf, I would imagine. So from there, where do we go then? Like, we're starting to get an idea, a picture. Is it then basing all your practice around that one area that stands out, or is it, where do you take it?
Well, I think quite relatable to everybody, definitely relatable to my game, is I'll go out on a day and my driving's amazing and the putting doesn't match up. And then I go out 2 days later and I'll hole every putt, but if it's everything right or left off the tee.
Yeah.
And you just think, if they all come together on one day, I'd be amazing. But you don't seem to have that perfect performance through all areas of the game. And it will happen in every way of life, though. If you just bag all your practice on one side of it, the other one's going to suffer slightly. It's about finding a balance,
I think. And again, that's where, like, you know, we're going on about data a little bit today, but even like, say, a partner of mine on the YouTube channel, Precision Pro, I've got 5 rounds stored in my new app there, and there's a theme starting to occur. Because you get that data, and it's not like you go, like Tom says there, you do go out and you do have these streaky days, but if you're, let's say, a poor iron player, you will have a day where, it gets a little bit better, but over those 10 rounds, with the things like strokes gained or, you know, greens hitting regulation, proximity to the holes and things, that's going to start showing up, isn't it? That actually there, you're not as good as you thought, you're not as streaky, there is this common occurrence of...
Yeah, doing an analysis on your game isn't a one-round thing. You can't do it in one practice session or one round of golf.
Mm.
The pros especially are doing it over a full season. People are looking at the performance over a whole year.
Mm.
And it's a consistent thing, and it will mean that your practice changes. It'll mean that what you're working on changes. It might even mean that you realise that what you're doing isn't working, and you've got to change your plan of action, which is fine.
It gives you a good understanding of yourself, doesn't it?
Exactly that, yeah.
You know, that's the idea. Like, and as we say, you know, like, how do I be honest with myself? Well, if you don't understand what your golf game is, how are you going to know to be honest about certain areas? You think, oh, you know, I'm a great driver of the ball, but then you look back and you go, oh, I actually lose two shots a round because of poor driving. These are just great ways for you to do it. And like you say earlier, I think a great point, the pros are doing it and we're doing it. You look at, I think, obviously, club technology as well now. It's got as far as it can, really, in the driver. You know, we're not going to see any dramatic big changes. But what we are starting to see now is things like Ping, Cobra, putting the Arcos units into the grip. So, you know, it's there. You can buy the grips with the units in already, just to put on your clubs that you may have, and
Give you a full detailed picture. That'll tell you your yardages of each club, which like I said before, with the game golf, that does as well over time. But again, these things take time, because you go and play on a cold day, and you go and play on a warm day, and your distances will be a bit different. So you need to take an average.
Yeah.
So it's not just I'm going to buy it, go and use it for one round, and it's going to tell me everything.
Mm.
But with Arcos, like you say, it'll give you your average distance of irons or drivers over a set amount of time.
Yeah, yeah.
It starts giving you the chance to question yourself as well, because you will come back with a day where you go, the golf ball's gone a lot further today when I'm hitting drive or whatever it is. It's going to make you realise... Well,
playing in Mexico.
The course is firmer. It's not rained for once in England, maybe. So the fairway's bouncing a little further. It might have been a windy day and you'll see a difference, but what that's going to make you do then, it's going to make you question yourself or question the game more, and then over time you'll probably start analysing the way you play a lot more when you're out there.
Yeah.
Because if you're someone who doesn't naturally take on the accountability of wind or whatever it might be, you don't have that knowledge yet.
Yeah.
When you see that picture on your phone or your laptop when you get home, it's going to make you click into the idea that, oh, yeah, it was windy. That's the reason. Right, I'll think about that more next time. And it'll just get you a lot better and give you a lot more
understanding
knowledge.
Conditions and how it affects your, you know, your game and your ball flight, definitely. And I think probably the people listening to this, you know, they're not going to be just casual golfers, are they, really, who are just dipping in and out like, oh, I fancy a game of golf on Saturday and not play for 6 months. I think everyone listening generally will be of the mindset of they're here to improve, they want to get better, they want to, you know, get the most out of their games and finding ways to do it. And I think, especially nowadays, it is so easy, isn't it, to do?
Yeah, there's stuff at your fingertips with everything. Yeah. Like I say, you can do the basic level if you're strapped for cash and you don't feel like you're committed enough to go and spend the couple hundred pounds yet. Mm. You still can do the scorecard that we said at the start.
And even the apps, like the Precision Pro one's free to download.
All right, okay.
It's free to, like, it's got all your stats on there.
Yeah.
And you can just do that. You don't have to have, like, the technology, as it were, like the game golf or the things in your clubs, like Tom says there. But, you know, it's a starting point, isn't it? And it gives you a good idea of everything.
Yeah. And if we look into the reasons why you do it, it's across every sport now, isn't it? So it's a case of football's doing it. Everything is so analytics.
It's the age of information, isn't it, now?
Everything is analyse, rewatch, let's look at stats.
Yeah.
So we've got a story about what Justin Rowe's done with Mark Brody, but just give us a little insight first into what strokes gained is. Give that little explanation for everyone.
Yeah, well, I don't know the perfect word by word, but if you Google it, there's a good word. But basically, it takes into account everybody who's playing that week. Instead of just saying, like, your standard scratch, the course is 70, the standard scratch 71. Well, it might be a really hot day, the course is playing easier, there's no rough, so that, you know, goes up and down or whatever. But basically, it measures you against the rest of the field that day and your performances over the season. So it measures each individual aspect of your game: driving, iron play, wedge play, putting, putts per green in regulation, proximity to the hole. You can get, like, super, super deep in it. And it is a little bit like strokes gained as a thing. When you look at it, it can be a bit mind-blowing. And I think you need to read it and, you know, familiarise yourself with it a few times before you actually look into it. Obviously, the PGA Tour lads and, like, LPGA players and European Tour players, they've generally got a team behind them who are doing it for them, or the PGA Tour collect all this data anyway, so you can
PGA Tour website at the end of it. You can get a player's stats over the season or over the tournament.
Yeah, over that one tournament. So you look at that, and it basically just gives you an idea of how you're stacking up against everyone you're competing in that field, to see either A, your good areas, or B, where your areas of improvement are needed.
Yeah, there are apps for it as well where you can get your strokes gained, and that Game Golf will give you a strokes gained total. And there's also an app that Mark Brody come up with all this. He done the app as well, which you can get up for, I think, £30 for the year. But then there's also, if you want to look at what the tour pros do, I use a website just called Live Strokes Gained, and that'll give you everyone's stats over the course of the tournament, who's playing this week. And it is good just to see what makes people do better, whether the putting's let them down this week. I mean, we've seen...
You never see a winner, really, do you, outside the top 10 on putting?
No, and to be fair, the one I wouldn't say I was really shocked at it, but I didn't think it would have much of an effect, is the approach play. Yeah. Like, the guy who's on form when he's knocking it in close, because that then has the knock-on effect to the ability to gain the strokes in the putting as well.
Yeah.
But the easiest sort of way I could explain how it's calculated, just on a very simple basis, is let's say we've got a 10-foot putt and they are made 40% of the time this week.
Mm.
If you go and make that 10-foot putt,
yeah,
that means you gain 0.6 of a stroke.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. So that's
that's
the very simple way of doing it, and obviously it goes into driving. It goes into your approach, because then an approach from 150, if a lot of players are hitting it within 10 foot and you go and knock it within 6, you've gained a stroke.
Yeah,
if you knock it within 20, you've lost a stroke. But that's really good for people to go and have a look into, just to get an idea of how much analysis goes into the game. And the story of Justin Rose was he was ranked kind of way out of the top. I think he was outside the top 25 at the time. And he was trying to figure out where to go with his game, how he was going
to
get...
Which manufacturer to work with.
Well, he's made some bad decisions on that one, hasn't he, lately? He needs to get back to the old days. But he basically said, well, where am I going to get to the speed number one in the world? And over a lot of analysis, they come up with the fact that if he just gained one stroke per tournament on the putting green, he would be world number one. And so it happened over time. Only 0.25 shots around on a four-shot tournament.
Yeah, it was like 6 foot and in, wasn't it? I thought eight foot and in.
Sorry, yeah, it was within six foot. And all he went and done is he just went ground away at it. Phil Kenyon really good involved. At the putting. He was with Phil Kenyon.
Get the magician.
And before you know it, over that time, he's there as world number one. And without being able to do that analysis and without being able to be honest about his game.
Yeah, and just keep working harder, keep working, it'll happen.
And he might be spending time with his driver in his hand on the range when he should have his putter in his hand.
On that, right, it's not a bit off topic. Rory, so good with a driver, isn't he?
And can't hit a green from 40 yards.
Yeah, and then obviously the Bryson effect comes in. This is where I get back to getting in the wrong lane because someone else is doing something and there's a load of hype about it. When we were just getting ready to come back from lockdown 4.230 or whatever it was, and you see Bryson out there, obviously what he's done, absolutely amazing. Then you see Rory with his GC quad, smashing drivers, showing off his ball speed, and it was you just need to get better with a wedge and a putter, mate.
Yeah, he's been in it a long way for a long time.
Yeah, he's the best driver of the golf ball in our generation by far. Just pure class with a driver. And then you think, well, there's someone grabbing hold of him saying, look at your strokes gained here.
Yeah, well, for the fact that he can knock us so close to so many greens, his wedge play, it's probably 2 years we've been saying this now.
I don't know what his stats are. I'd love to see them now. I've not actually done a deep dive into it, but he is obviously a good putter and a good wedge player. I'm not saying that he's dog, but I'd love to know.
That's where it'd be harder up at their level, wouldn't it? And we're talking about finding, being quite honest with your game.
Yeah.
And they could all sit there and go, well, I'm pretty amazing at everything.
Yeah,
and they
are. I've got four majors, mate. Yeah. Got 80 million in the bank.
And they are really good at everything, but it's a case of being able to go and find that
finite. Because you look at someone like Dustin Johnson, what was it, about 4 years ago, just started working on that wedge play.
And now, over time, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, and now because he was already bombing it, so why keep working on bombing it when you can just, you can get closer with the wedge. And obviously his stats would show that, if you did a strokes gain of from 50 to 120 yards from 4 years ago to now, I would imagine he's dramatically different, isn't he?
Yeah, and we were talking about Bryson with distance and 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
We're talking about DJing distance.
Yeah.
And he's probably not completely left that part of his game alone. He's still standing there smashing driver.
Yeah, you look at him again, solid grafter, he's there under the floodlights working on his putting, isn't he?
Exactly,
and
but over
time. Leaving, obviously, super statistician as well, isn't he? He wants to know exactly what's going on. And he wouldn't know that without any data. If he just said, is the ball going far enough? Yeah, it is. Okay, box ticked. There's no way of knowing it without having, at least some. And obviously, like I say, it is easier for those guys and girls because they've got the PGA doing it for them. But they've also got teams that are working behind them. Have you got the stats there?
I'm just trying to pull up the stats on McIlroy because I'm interested now to see his strokes gained
approach to the green.
So greens in regulation is 66%.
130th.
Yeah.
So you're knocking near, it that far. Going for the green. Going for the green hit.
So if we took a
go rough
driver,
proximity.
If rough proximity is 48. 171st.
Wow.
So the guy is hitting it. He's up in the top 5. Oh, he's probably close to the top 5% of driving distance. Where's has it got his driving distance stats?
Off the tee there. Strokes gained off the tee is 15th off the tee.
So he's 15th off the
third,
tee.
Oh, third. No, there. Strokes gained off the tee, third.
Or third off the tee. So he's that good off the tee.
Second in
and
driving
he's
distance.
Himself, and he's up there. So he is pretty much bombing it down the middle a lot of the time. And he's a lot closer than the rest of the field. He's in a good position compared to the rest of the field, yet he's making himself 171st in approach play.
That's
wild. You need to go and practice, Rory.
Hit it further. Well, to be fair, if he hit it further,
hits the green
he could
in one.
Hit the green in one.
He wins.
Yeah, or he could get to the point where he doesn't need a wedge. He could use a Texas or a Mashie Niblick.
A little Odyssey chip putter.
Yeah. not like no hatred there towards Rory, but that's our point there of... you know, once you've got the data, you can see exactly where you need to be working on. So yes, you need to go and still practice your driver, but at the same time, that's glaringly obvious that, you know, if he had, let's say, that 170th for the next 6 months went to 10th, and his driver stayed where it would, it'd be like Tiger dominance.
Yeah, he's up there.
It'd just be like win, 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 win. Yeah. Because then all of a sudden your ball's closer to the hole, so the putts become easier.
Yeah.
And scores come down.
Yeah, and it's obviously not a overnight change. There's obviously a problem there, because we have been saying this for 2 years about Rory now. That's not new news. I'm sure he knows that.
New news.
I'm sure he knows it. It's not just a case of we've just figured it out there. He's fully aware that...
I thought we just...
Give him a ring.
Yeah. Hey, Rory, got an idea for you, mate.
Next week, Rory McIlroy coached by Tom Fearon and Matt Fryer.
Oh, it'd just be amazing.
So, it's just a case of going and finding that out and making sure that you then act upon it and trying to bring them all to the same level of ability rather than just being great at one aspect,
great driver,
not good at another,
poor putter, poor chipper. Because what you can do from there then as well is, obviously, how many times does it happen for us at the driving range? Obviously, we are victims sort of our own success there, that, you know, you're a busy coach and you're at the driving range, so you can't get out onto the golf course as much as you like with your players. So every time they walk in, it's like, can I have a look at my driver? Can I have a look at my driver?
I said last week, didn't I, it needs to be a skill of the student to be able to come into our lesson and give us a very good picture of the game, because we can't see it. And if they could come in and show us, they don't need to show us strokes gain and stats like the PGA Tour, but if they could just show us that screen on the phone from Game Golf or Arcos or whatever it might be, it just gives us a chance to go, well, no, you do need to work on your approach play. Let's get better at 50 yards. You'll be able to see, my approach play is good, and then as soon as I get a 6-iron or longer in my hand, I'm terrible. So we need to go long irons. It can break your game down into such small portions that you'll be able to improve massively just by keeping track of those stats. It's not just something for elite performers in sport.
No.
If you do it from whatever ability you are, you will be a lot better.
I think as well, you know, obviously with the age of information as well, so many people are like, trying to nerd out on, you know, GC quad numbers and like, oh, ball speed, oh, you know, to buy a quad is like 18 grand.
Yeah.
To buy something that's going to track your stats, maybe a couple of hundred quid. To understand every facet of a quad or a TrackMan or a flight scope as well, you'd need to go and probably do the degree that we've done to really get knowledgeable on like how D-plane works, how your spin axes are working and things like that, as where learning how close you've hit it to a hole is a little bit easier.
Yep,
so it's getting like again, that falls back into that, oh, well, everyone's talking TrackMan numbers and everyone's talking this. But yeah, well, get to know your own game first. It doesn't really matter. Out on the golf course, you've not got a TrackMan. But we can record what you've done in terms of where you've hit the golf ball and how many shots you took.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the game is getting the ball in the hole and as little shots as possible, rather than let's see if I can get all the zeros on TrackMan, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's great to see, and we want to do it. And if we can build a technique that gets us close to those zeros and gives me the biggest ball speed, amazing.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, if I can't get it in the hole in less shots than I did last week, then I'm not doing it as well.
Yeah.
You look at the likes of Bubba Watson, he's probably never been close to zeros on a TrackMan in his life, slinging the golf ball left and right, and he still knows his game. He still understands where he needs to get better, where he needs to improve, and goes and wins some majors and makes a lot of money from it.
Yeah.
So it's not about being technically perfect all the time and having the best numbers on your TrackMan.
I think probably last night's win and runner-up sums it up nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, you look at Bryson, who's gone through this massive transformation over a year, and he's only just won by one shot. Obviously, winning's winning, and he has won. But you look at Lee Westwood, who knows what's good for his game. Yes, he works hard in the gym and he is a great driver of the golf ball, but he's done what he's done over, you know, an unbelievable career amount of time-wise, and he's up there competing with someone who is like the it thing at the moment in his own way. He's found out what's working, he knows what to work on.
He really shows you can do it in your own way, like you say. The fact that he's probably 40 yards, 30 yards on average behind Bryson, he's not got that he's not got a professional lifelong caddy on the bag. He's got his wife, which he's now got his wife on his bag for 2 or 3 years, which clearly seems to work well for
him. Love it.
And it's not just about going and doing what Bryson's done or doing what McIlroy's done. He's just really good at the game. He's been doing it for years. He's 48 years old. How old's Bryson? 27? And probably in the... His physique is probably in its peak.
Yeah, and can that hold up?
No. There was something else getting said a few weeks ago, actually, a very good point on the Golf Channel. And they were talking about how it's a very strong possibility of golfers' careers now becoming a lot more flashing like maybe a footballer's career, where it's a shorter career because you go out, you make an awful lot of money within 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
You put your body through all of this strain and it's not what it was. Where you go back to the older days, Nicholas, and he's got to play for... He's got to play golf for 30, 40 years. Mickelson's been playing for how many years?
Yeah.
And I think it's more a case of they are putting the body through that much strain. Is his back going to hold up? Is his the forces he's putting through his body?
Yeah, his knees and his ankles.
Yeah, so that'll be an interesting one. And because there is so much money up for grabs on the PGA and European Tour, I suppose it is easier to just say, well, I'm going to go and absolutely smash it for 10 years.
Yeah,
win a fortune.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't matter. I can retire. I can go and play casual
golf.
Wait
for the seniors tour to then recharge your bank account with a few more million.
Can you imagine Bryson on the seniors tour still smashing it?
screaming. Good long ball. Oh, brilliant.
Right, shall we close that session off? I think that's a good little coaching session.
Yeah, so it's...
It's not just for the pros.
It's not just for the pros, and it doesn't have to be as complicated, as I think, as sometimes it's made to look.
Definitely not.
The stuff's there at your fingertips. You know, there's free apps out there. There's even just, like we say, the old scorecard way to do it. So if you enjoyed last week's one and you're thinking you wanted a little bit more of a deep dive on it, I think we've, done quite a good way of summarising it all there. And just even just start, if it's the scorecard one, just make a start and then you can build up and up from there. You know, you don't have to be, after one round of golf, giving us your proximity to the hole from 120, 150, 175. just tell us how many greens you've hit and, how many balls you did lose off the tee or whatever it may be. And then from there, you'll get comfortable with it and you can go on from there.
Perfect. Great little chat about that, Matt. We'll come back in a minute with some listeners' questions.
Boom.
Okay guys, we want this podcast to be built around you, the listener. We want to give you tips, we want to answer your questions, we want to give you a chance to win prizes, and we want to be as interactive as possible with all of you. To do this, we need you to not be shy and get in touch. Send us your questions about coaching, weekly topics in the golf world, or just anything you feel will make you a better player. Let us know if there's anybody in the world of golf that you want to hear from, and we'll try and get them involved too. So here's what you've got to do. Pause the podcast now, scroll down to the bottom, and follow us on all social media platforms and take note of our email address. The best way to send in your questions is via email to thecoachescornerpod@gmail.com. Right then, Matt, we've got three listeners' questions to go through today. I've got them all in front of me, so I will fire them at you.
Oh, lovely.
Question number one from Aaron Burke. This one come through Instagram. And it is it better to concentrate on hitting a consistent shape shot all the time rather than trying to hit it straight and missing it both left and right, or I assume trying to shape your shot a few different ways? He said he's been trying to just stay with a consistent shot shape for a while and it seems to have helped him. Would you agree with doing that?
Yeah, I think you get comfortable with one that you can sort of, like, you would have your stock shot, as it's called, and you can get one that you rely on under a little bit of pressure. You've got to understand your golf swing and get comfortable with a move so it can start to produce these ball flights. And then from there, when you feel like you have some control over that, then we can start to try and move it, both ways. Hitting it straight, if you look at tour players, you wouldn't see straight shots generally. Everything's got a little bit of movement now. A fade for these tour players is like 3 yards. It's not 20 yards. It's very tight. And you would look at a draw versus a fade and you wouldn't see that much difference in them, unless it is a player that is putting a load of loop on the golf ball. But generally, they'll have a style in which they play. you know, it might be as well that they hit a draw off the tee with the driver and they fade the irons because they feel that, you know, I definitely think, you know, fade now is almost cool and acceptable.
Yeah, it was.
If you faded the golf ball, it was like, oh, that's like how choppers play and it doesn't go as far. But the way the ball's constructed now, the way clubs are constructed, you know, a fade goes as long as a draw, and it's far easier to keep a fade under control. If you get something hooking, if you like ask all the pros, if they're a right-hander, they hate that miss left where it's just diving, because once it's gone, it's gone. So I would say, yeah, work on one shot, have the ability to, you know, fall back on a fade draw, whatever it may be, and then from there, then you can start to work on moving it both ways.
Yeah, and I think to answer a little bit of that there as well, you think of maybe DJ, he takes one side of the course out to play as much as he can, and he hates to see anything go left.
Yeah.
If you do play a little fade, if you maybe play a 10-yard fade, you can get that under control.
Yeah.
It's always better because you can make the golf course and you can make the fairway wider. If you're aiming down the middle of the fairway,
yeah,
and you're not sure whether it's going to fade, draw, you've just created two smaller fairways either side of your centre line.
Yeah.
If you can aim down the left 10% of the fairway, you know you're not going to pull it because it's not what you do.
Yeah.
Then
you'll hit one every now and again.
Yeah, sometimes you will, but you've got kind of maybe a 30 or 40 yard fairway to your right there.
Yeah.
Where you can create a 10 yard fade's going to hit the fairway, a straight shot's going to hit the fairway, and then a 20, 30 yard fade where maybe, or the slice where you just overdo it, you're still going to be in play.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'd definitely say aim for the same sort of shot every time and understand what you're trying to do.
Understand it. Know your ball flight.
I'm glad you said flight. all right, Stephen Barlett. This is quite an interesting one because he's obviously got a bit of knowledge about where the golf ball strikes on the face. But there's
must have watched the video.
Simple answer to it is, hi guys. Hi guys. How do I manage to slice the ball when my strike comes from the toe, or occasionally the center? He sent a picture in as well where he's clearly been using some spray on the face and. Yeah, a lot of strikes in towards the toe end, but how is he still slicing it?
Well, you know, the gear effect on a golf club isn't going to say, if you're glancing it at like 10 degrees from out to in and the face is, you know, 6 or 7 degrees right of that, it can still, you know, you're still going to slice it from there.
Gear effect's not pulling it back when your club face is 10 degrees open.
Yeah, if the face is that wide open, there's nothing going to help you, unless you buy a tailor-made driver, of course, that has whatever the twist face that, you know.
But you do have to, every time you strike it off the toe, you do have to shout twist face as loud as you can for it to work.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the key. And then it'll come back to the middle of the fairway for you every time.
It's possible if you deliver such a glancing blow, the spin axis on the golf ball will alter and you will hit a slice. If you do hit it a little bit toey, it's not always going to be that little bit draw, and I've not seen the picture you've just shown there, but it depends how toey it is as well. If it's like
there is some out the middle,
there's a couple there that are, and they look
some high toes,
high, so you're hitting down and across it, it's going to be having a lot of spin on that golf ball, and we'll see that it would go out to the right. So, you know, for yourself there, A, you've got to get it more centred, and then B, you've got to look at your face angle and your path angle.
Yeah, if you were to keep striking it from the toe where you are there, but you manage to start squaring the face up, you are going to stop seeing the slice.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you'll start seeing that gear effect come into play, and
the
ball might start hooking, go low, and it probably won't feel great either off the face, but centered strike isn't necessarily going to straighten you up straight away. All right, we'll go for
one
last one. This is from Ben, and it's I avoid miss round lapses in concentration and quickening up of my tempo/speed of play? Often find myself coming back off two or three bad holes and thinking to myself that I'd barely paid any attention. And tips on how you can cope with being behind people who are playing really slowly. Ends up feeling like you're switching off, not in the right frame of mind, probably standing on the tee looking at them people really slow and doesn't get back into it.
Is he drinking on the golf course?
That could be a problem if he's not.
If he's, yeah, you could.
Couple of beers.
You could be blacking out and then you come round and that could help it. But like first question there.
It's got concentration first. How do you keep his concentration up for the long 4.5 hours he's out there?
I think people get confused that you have to concentrate the whole time that you're there. You know, realistically, you're probably actually only playing for what a golf swing set a second long. Maybe the process is like 2 minutes tops. So you've probably got an hour and a half of concentration that you need to be on. If you're trying to stay focused the whole time, you know, from walking off the putting green onto the first tee to signing your scorecard on the 18th, you just can't concentrate for 4.5 hours. It's not possible. Imagine, like, working. You'd have a break, wouldn't you? You'd have a little, you know, drink of your coffee and...
You'd be wasting a lot of energy. It's not realistic, and you probably wouldn't enjoy it as much. You wouldn't get to have that chat with your mates down the fairway or whoever you're playing with. You need to be switching off.
Yeah, so pre-shot routine and developing better routines on the golf course, i.e., you know, once you've hit your shot, yes, you can think about it for 10 seconds or for 10 yards that you walk, then you're back to talking a bit of nonsense with your mates. And then when you get, you know, close to your ball, maybe it's 5 paces from the golf ball, that's when, like, the conversation stops. You go into your sort of bubble of concentration again to get you ready for the shot. You hit it and then come out of that bubble again. Would definitely be a way. There's things like your physical fitness as well. If you are getting fatigued because you're not that physically fit, that's going to cause concentration lapses and diet stuff, like I joked about the beer on the golf course there. But you will get people who, you know, are eating chocolate bars, a couple of things, so all of a sudden you get a big sugar rush,
smash a driver, and then
you've got a downer on the next hole and you're not quite there. Is where you look at, like, the pros, you see them with the nuts and the water and energy drinks and so on and so forth out on the course. So there's lots of facets, but I would definitely say getting a routine in place would be a big one. And then on the second question, what was it?
Being able to not get wound up, I suppose, not fall out of your flow if you've got a flow going.
I think, you know, the game of golf lends itself to that, in that you can only control the controllables. If they are taking a minute, you know, you can have a word with them and say, look, lad, you are taking too long here. Can we come through? You've held us up for the last 5 or 6 holes or whatever it is, you know, in a nice way. You don't have to be aggressive about it or anything. And they might say, yeah, go on. We were just nervous of letting anyone through or whatever it may be. But then, like I say, controlling the controllables, if you're stood thinking about said 4 ball in front of you instead of chatting with your mates about the footy, and all you focused on is how slow are these, well, forget about it. Unless you physically go and pick them up and run them around the golf course, you can't control that. That's down to them. So, you know,
it's not going to do you any good standing on the tee for 5 minutes thinking about the shot about to hit
with your hands on your side, and then all of a sudden, oh, their fault that I didn't do that. You know, you've got to find a way to, again, that routine, switch off, chat about whatever it is with your mates. You know, you're getting time to chat to them that, you know, would you rather be stuck in work or out there with your pals chatting about, you know, football, whatever it may be, life in general. And then when it does come to play, get back in your focus bubble and go. But it is a tricky one, and it is annoying, slow play. And like I say, if you can approach the players with, you know, a kind word and a little bit of friendly advice, instead of getting, you know, turning into a psycho and wanting to cause a fight with them.
Or smashing one down the middle when they're 100 yards away.
Just like things like that. Just, you know, just a, hey guys, do you mind if we come through? And
have you ever had, on a personal experience, Matt, that feeling of falling out of the zone when you just off the slow play, but maybe when you've got a round together? Because I've got one very sort of vivid memory from when I was about 14. It's one of the first times I ever remembered being in the zone, and I felt like nothing could go wrong. And then I got to a point of the game, and whether it was, because it was in a competition as well, whether it was nerves of not being able to believe I was in that position or whatever it was, all of a sudden it felt like every bit of energy. I remember walking, it's a long walk from the 13th up the hill to the 14th tee. Nothing had gone wrong. I was a couple under par, playing off about 10 bandit.
Cheat.
And all of a sudden I just felt like every little bit of energy zapped out of my body. I stood over the tee shot on 14, and I'd felt like whatever zone I was in for those previous 2.5 hours had gone. And maybe that was a case of I'd been in that concentration, walking down the fairway, not really talking to people much, I was thinking, I'm playing well, I'm in a competition, and I'd just spent 2.5 hours at the peak of concentration.
Yeah.
Whereas if I had been able to have that knowledge, what you said before, of taking myself out of it, maybe I would have had some preserve for them last 4 or 5 holes.
Yeah, you know, on a personal, I probably got in my way too much when I was playing and stuff like that through anger. Like, would want it to go.
You've got some rage on a golf course.
I used to.
Love to see it.
I've only had like one club throw in the, well, partly because we've been locked down. I've thrown loads at the net in my garage. like I say, yeah, I was probably more getting in my own way, where I would be going well, and then, you know, you're on a knife's edge because you know, playing a nice game of golf, then that one bad shot, instead of just thinking, right, come on, let's get on to the next one. Or if, you know, it got a slightly funny bounce, I would react to it. So, like I say, you know, controlling those controllables. And that's where, when I play with the lads now that I play with, it's more of a treat for me to go and play, and I'm not really bothered about my score, because I'm just going out with them for a game of golf and a pint afterwards, and I absolutely love it. So I end up not being that fussed about my golf, which actually works better for me, because I'm not expecting, you know, oh, I've got to go and shoot 600 today. It's like, oh, just if I have a good laugh with them, that's great. That's like the box ticked, and that falls into better golf for me. So, and do you know what? It's tough to learn, is the thing. You're not gonna like get it overnight. It's gonna take some time to get used to it all and understand what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. So, Ben, some takeaways from that is don't try and keep yourself in game mode for 4.5 hours. Definitely come out of that zone. Try not to get too annoyed at the people in front of you. You can only control what your game is, and you can only control what's in front of you. And I think that'll definitely help you. And maybe do just think of your diet, your breakfast. What if you're taking snacks and water?
Mackie's onto the golf course isn't a good one.
Yeah, but we all do it every time we go to play golf. Mackie's on the way.
It's so tasty.
All right, perfect. Speaking of that, Matt, actually, you said then about getting annoyed at the ball if the ball got a bad bounce or whatever.
Yeah.
How would you feel if you're down 18 and you're against Bryson and you need a birdie to get into the playoff? It was last night. This has happened.
Yeah.
Lee Westwood goes and hits what is a long drive for him. I think he hit it 300 yards. And it rolls into an absolute crater of a divot. Ridiculous rule or what? Do you think you should get relief from it, or because it was horrible? I don't know if anyone's seen the size of that divot.
You've shown me the clip. I fell asleep watching the last two holes because I'm old. But it isn't nice. I think it's a strange rule, isn't it? You know, like I'm of the mindset of like you play golf, you don't pick the ball up until it's in the hole.
Shooter McGavin had to play at a Frankenstein's big fat foot. Remember?
Exactly, yeah, and Happy had to play like through the scaffolding that fell down. So we all get bad breaks. But yeah, it is a strange one, isn't it? Especially like the divot rule. When you've done the hard work of hitting it down the fairway, you know, you could have a divot and then a yard to the right of you, there'd be a tractor mark that was a little bit of a wet ground, and you get relief from it.
And it's actually fine. It's a lie.
Yeah, because it's like groundkeeper's workings and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, again, you know, you look at how Westwood handled it. He wasn't, you know, spitting his dummy out, throwing his clubs and effing and jeffing and everything. He just said, right, well, you know, this is what it is.
Yeah.
I've got to get
played
it.
Played a good shot as well.
Yeah, you know, he hit it great. You know, sometimes in a divot, it isn't actually that bad. You know, I feel like
that one, he was more in a bunker though.
Yeah, that one was like a sanded divot that would just look like someone had had a right hack at it. So I think
when you look at them playing for, when they're playing for the money they're playing for, and when they are so good, by the time you get to the fourth day, the amount of divots in that one landing area, because they're all good enough to pretty much hit the ball, it looks like there's more divots than fairway sometimes, apart from Bryson,
area,
who's 50 yards above the rest of them, and he's got his own little bit of fairway.
Figured it all out. He didn't want to hit it in divots. I think, yeah, it is strange. But then again, you look at controlling the controllables. Obviously, we didn't see every single shot of Lee Westwood through the whole week. He might have had a drive that took a favourable bounce. You know, might have just caught a splinker and it nudged it back towards towards a fairway or towards a green, or when his balls stop rolling, when he's missed a green, it's not quite caught the collar. So you get ups and downs, don't you? It's easy to say, oh God, I'm in a divot, and throw your hands up, but you forget about it ricocheting off a tree and coming back in play.
Yeah, we probably don't take notice of that enough when we want to complain loads about the bad break.
Yeah.
And when something good does happen, then you don't seem to take much from it.
Was it Bryson last night? There was someone where he hit a poor bunker shot, and then he was like, oh, here we go, the worst bunkers on the PGA Tour. Amazing American accent there. but you're like, if you know the bad,
don't go in them.
Crack on with it, yeah. What's your issue?
Yeah. Do you think it's a rule that should be changed, considering that you can go and you can put one in the depth of the trees near a grid and you get to take relief from that and you end up with quite a nice lie, and then in the other way you can hit it down the middle? Is it a real changer, isn't it? I mean, they've just changed it only last year, 18 months ago, to be able to now fix spike marks and be able to repair certain blemishes on the green, whereas you never could, and that was quite unfair.
Is that hasn't just changed now?
Well, a while ago.
joking there, obviously. I think, a good valid point, especially on tour when...
It's a lot of money.
A lot of money that they're playing for, but when they're all... like you say, in the same sort of category and hitting it similar distances and figuring, they plot the way around the golf course in a similar manner. Obviously, there are outliers to that. You will see, divot spots starting to appear, and you run the risk, especially on some courses where they're very undulating and they run, down slopes and things like that.
I think where my problem would be if they did change the rule, is you would have...
What would you class as like a divot, though?
That's the problem. You'd have Patrick Reed trying to claim just a little blade of grass missing is a free drop, and he gets to go and drop it on the green 6 inches from the pin.
He'd actually be pegging every ball up.
So
slander!
You'd end up with games of golf taking hours because they're getting rules officials in every 2 minutes. And then at your club level, you would probably end up with people just teeing the ball up on a nicer bit of grass, claiming they were in an old divot.
Yeah.
How old does the divot have to be?
That's where you've got that hazy line. So I think, you'll get some that are shockers, and that's just golf. So I wouldn't change it probably for that reason.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't. Deal with it.
Yeah, deal with it.
You get good breaks, you get bad breaks.
Put it back in your stance a little bit and just club up. It's going to come out low and hot. So
if you're in a divot, take a bigger divot. So you get it out, smash it, go deep
into
the floor.
And do you know what? On some of them, obviously, the divots are like just puffs of dirt, but just shows that, everyone should be replacing the divots to stop it happening.
Yeah, that's the one. I suppose that's where it's different as well, where they play. Over in certain courses, I can't remember whether it's the type of grass or wherever it was, but definitely in Florida.
Kikuya grass?
I think it's a few different breeds of grass.
Yeah.
Basically, when you... Over in England, we just replace our divots, so it's back together quite quickly. Doesn't take too long.
Mm.
Over in a lot of places, especially in Florida, it's just a case of you throw sand in the divot.
Yeah.
Because when the divot comes
explodes,
up,
doesn't
it doesn't come up in one piece of grass that you can replace. So I suppose in England, where we're playing, we don't get many times when it happens. Yeah. In Florida, it's happening a lot more, maybe. I don't know. But it's probably not a real life change. It was unfortunate. They both made par to finish the game, and he went home happy, and as you told me before, that pretty much guarantees his place in the Ryder Cup, does it, this year?
I think so, yeah.
Which would be nice to see.
11th Ryder Cup now for Westwood, that'll be, which is just, imagine that, 11, like, that's like playing, I know it doesn't come around as often, but that'd be like playing...
It's a good record, isn't it?
Five World Cups, is that right?
World Cup, four years.
Is it 4 years? So, 11 Ryder Cups every 2 years, 22 years. I can't do the maths.
Come on.
Five.
You got it.
Five.
There you go.
Yeah. I got GCSE in maths. Got a C. But, you look at that. 11 Ryder Cup appearances, just brilliant.
It's a long time at the top of the game, isn't it?
Yeah. I woke up this morning and I looked at the leaderboard after falling asleep and I was like, do you know what? I really hope he can carry this form to the Open.
Yeah, that'd be class, wouldn't it?
I just want to see him. He's such a top bloke.
Yeah.
Great game, great for the game. If he won a Ryder Cup, run an Open, or a major,
that'd
it'd
be
just
one of the best
be, it'd just
to
be
see.
Clash. Just absolute class.
Talking sort of longevity of a career, Mickelson's just dropped out of the top 100 for the first time in 28 years.
Yeah.
That's a career as well, and it wasn't long ago, to be fair.
That's nearly my lifetime.
That's longer than my lifetime.
Yeah.
So he's been top of the golfing world for as long as I've been alive.
That's mad.
Which is impressive. And I think it wasn't long ago I was impressed at the same stat, because I think it was only maybe 18 months ago he dropped out of the top 50.
Yeah.
And it was like, and basically he'd been top 50 in the world for my whole life, which is just ridiculous.
Unbelievable. And they had like class amateur careers before that as well. It wasn't as if like they just popped up. They'd been winning, you know, NCAAs and US amateurs and things like that, probably for 4 or 5 years as well. So,
yeah, it was unfortunate Tiger was there to take everything off him, wasn't it? Because he would have won a lot more. Well, it's unfortunate for him.
Yeah.
Definitely not for us.
Yeah,
he was just around at the wrong time, wasn't he? Getting there. And it was quite good to see there how much their relationship's changed now, I suppose. Well, yeah. I always think that with him and Tiger, whereas back in the day, it was kind of a fierce rivalry. And they didn't really, I mean, Tiger didn't really get on with anyone. I suppose he was his own robot.
He did get on with some people.
A couple. he was his own robot and didn't have many relationships on tour, I suppose. But that was quite a fierce one. And now they've both calmed down a little bit. And even watching them now, whatever the age they are, Mickelson's
still class.
How old's Mickelson? 50 odd? 50. You could go on the seniors tour and basically clear up.
Oh,
exactly what he can do.
But he can still compete on the main.
Why would you? Yeah. Maybe they'll move the seniors age to 60.
Yeah.
Right then.
Right. Is that it?
Yeah.
You done?
That's us for the day. Go and film some videos.
Some Tippingtons. Righty ho then. Well, thank you for listening, everyone. If you don't already, do remember to go and follow us on all our social channels as well, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple and drop us a review on there as well. It really helps get the podcast out and get it to more and more listeners, which would be great to help as many people as we can improve their golf. Same time next week, Tom.
Yeah, some really good questions there this week as well, so thanks for sending those in. The guys who we answered, there's a couple who we didn't answer that we will get to. We're only going to do 3 a week, so we're not boring everyone or going on for hours. But yeah, keep them coming in. We will post some things on Instagram requesting your questions. Make sure you keep them coming, because we need them to help you. I'm sure you're not the only person asking those questions.
Yeah.
We've probably just answered that for more than one listener, so thanks a lot for them. And same time next week, every Wednesday. Thanks for listening.
Ciao.